All right, so you're listening to this podcast right now, London is Blue, and guess what? We host our podcast on anchor.fm. That's right. If you're looking to host your own podcast, this is the easiest free way to get started. It's got a content creation tool, allows you to record and the podcast right from a phone. That's right. Don't even need a computer, but you can do it there too. They'll also help you distribute it, which is probably the most challenging part. You don't want to have to mess with that. They got you covered. You can get it right on a Spotify and Apple Podcasts, as well as any other place podcasts are found. And you know what? You can monetize it too. Make a little cash for sharing your great content with the world. It's everything you need to make a podcast all in one individual place. So you know what? Head over to your app store, download the Anchor app, or head to anchor.fm to get started if you're ready to launch your podcast and make it happen.
Hi, this is Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
I'm Pat Nevin.
I'm Mason Mount. You're listening to the London is Blue podcast.
All right, Chelsea fans, welcome back to another episode, that's right, of the London is Blue podcast, your home for all things Chelsea news. And guess what? Fresh off of vacation, Nick, we have Matt Law back once again, joining us to drop some tasty Chelsea morsels with us. So, Matt, happy to have you back off of holiday. And how are you feeling?
I was feeling refreshed, but I've had a busy couple of weeks since I've been back from holiday. We've had Kai Havertz keeping me busy. I have to cover the England national football team as well. So the less said about that, the better. But let's just say that's kept me very busy the last 24 hours.
Yeah, no surprise there. Well, hey, on this episode today, it is jam-packed. We're going to go through some of the incoming transfers that are rumored to be linked to the club. Obviously, a goalkeeper in Edouard Mendy, who's looking very likely, what the status is of Declan Rice. We're going to talk about any of the outgoing deals, what maybe had a landing spot for a couple of key players who are looking for a new home, and then just maybe some general thoughts around how Chelsea are looking to approach the season ahead. But Matt, we want to jump right in on what looks like it's going to be the hottest news, which is a true challenger for Kepa coming into the club from Rennes with Eduardo Mendy. You reported just recently that about £18 million should get the deal across the line, and he has the approval of Cech and Lallechon. I guess maybe because we kind of do you feel that deal is really close to being done? And if so, was that just a very recent development, or how long have the club been tracking him as an option?
The club have been tracking him, I think, since last season. I think Cech and Lallechon have been looking at various options for a while, and he's clearly one with their Rennes connection that they'd know an awful lot about. In terms of how, I'm told it's actually been closed for a good week or so now. I don't think there's a lot to do on it. I just think it was a case of they were getting Havertz done. There's probably a few little bits and bobs to sort out. But I think this one's been in the pipeline now for a little while, probably since I went on vacation a few weeks ago. So, it's looking like the one. And the really interesting thing for me is that this is Petr Cech's choice. I mean, obviously, Lampard gives his approval. It's joined up thinking. But from what I'm told, Lampard was happy to put his faith and trust in Cech for the goalkeeper. I think different options were brought to the table with different values and budgets. But in terms of what Chelsea wanted to spend and in terms of the proportion of their full budget that they wanted to end up putting on a goalkeeper, this is Cech's guy. And there's probably no better person to have choose the goalkeeper, I'd suggest.
Yeah, no wonder Frank was willing to put his trust in one Petr Cech. I think everyone's immediate question, Matt, is what does this mean for Kepa? I mean, there's been, I think Petr Cech has come out in recent weeks and said that he wants to see Kepa succeed, and that he, you know, hopefully will stay and fight for his place, and that there is a true goalkeeper on goalkeeper battle this season. Is that what you're kind of fearing?
Well, look, I think it will become a little bit clearer once the Mendy signature is fully complete. I mean, Kepa's people, I've been talking to Kepa's people the last week, and Kepa's people are adamant that he is happy to stay and fight, and that he actually would relish the competition. So I think from his perspective, I would be surprised if it prompts any sort of request to leave from his side. There hasn't been really any interest in him. I mean, we spoke about this the last pod I did with you because of the COVID and the financial impact, and because he's the most expensive goalkeeper in the world. I mean, he's very, very, very difficult to get out. The fact as well that Chelsea ended up deciding, rather than going for an Oblak or a very, very expensive goalkeeper, would suggest that they think there is an extremely good chance that Kepa will stay and that it will be a battle for the number one. Otherwise, I think if they really thought that they could get rid of him or that they were really going to try and push him out, they might have gone for a more expensive goalkeeper. So, look, at the moment, it's hard to give you a definitive on that. But I, if you were to ask my opinion will be is that both goalkeepers will certainly be there for the first part of the season, and that Mendy probably will start as number one, but there will be a battle there. And look, Kepa's people are ultra positive about him wanting to stay at Chelsea at the moment. And they also actually, funnily enough, talk well of how Frank has tried to handle the situation in that he dropped him, he brought him back, so he offered him another chance. He didn't just drop him and then leave him out. And also I'm told that Frank has been sympathetic to the fact that, you know, Kepa recognises that his form and confidence was in a bad place. And I think they have spoken. I don't think the relationship has broken down there.
Yeah. So it seems like the other thing that might be happening is, you know, we now have an option where we've gone in with a more affordable keeper in Mendy, gives us the option potentially have a Kepa rebound. But do you think the club is also viewing this with an eye on potentially the next summer when, you know, someone like Donnarumma comes up at the end of his Milan contract, where there may be some better options available if Mendy doesn't pan out, if Kepa doesn't improve, that we're keeping ourselves or keeping the options open for next summer too?
Yeah, it keeps the door open, doesn't it? It means that Chelsea haven't put themselves in an even more difficult position if, as you say, an opportunity to sign one of the really top goalkeepers in the world comes up, or if Mendy doesn't quite work out and he's not quite the class they were hoping for. Look, I think they'll be signing Mendy because of the Czech Lolishon recommendation and because they clearly feel he can. I think at the moment they are signing him thinking he can step up. And a bit like, you know, a bit like Czech was in a way, although Czech was younger, not come as a renowned world number one goalkeeper, but build into that. I think that's what they're signing Mendy for. But it does keep the option there. I mean, there's no way they can get an Oblak or a Donnarumma or someone this summer, I don't think, with the budgets and everything else they want to do. So if that opportunity arises, then this time next year, then they can still look at it and still potentially do it.
Is the Mendy deal, at least from what you're hearing, mostly about having someone with different attributes to what our current goalkeepers have? Or is it completely just, We have another option that is a competitor for the shirt?
They wanted a tall goalkeeper. I know that. And that sounds really obvious. That sounds such a simple, obvious thing for a goalkeeper. It sounds like the kind of thing my five-year-old son could say. But because of the problems they had on set pieces and their two most successful recent goalkeepers, Cech and Courtois, are very tall goalkeepers, both sort of 6'4", 6'5", you know. I think Lampard, having played with Cech, values having a tall goalkeeper. I think Cech and Lolishon recognise that because of the problems on set pieces, they do need someone who they believe can come off the line and dominate their area, which I think everyone would agree is not Kepa's strongest point. Look, I'll be totally honest, I haven't seen a lot of Mendy. I've in the last 2 days, I've spoken to people both on the Chelsea side and in France, who have seen an awful lot of him. They tell me he's good with his feet, that he can distribute the ball well, which they definitely need because of the style of football that they play. So I think he does bring something different. I'm told he's a good lad. I'm told he's a confident lad. So I think from the height perspective, he definitely brings something different for them, and something both through their defence and the goalkeeper last season they were really struggling on.
So the other hotly linked name is not just a type of food, but one, Declan Rice. After we completed a bit of a smash and grab of the German market, picking up Havertz and Werner, Declan Rice is the name that's been on everybody's mind. West Ham started to make some interesting player sales, even getting called out by Mark Noble on Twitter for selling some future players that they would have liked to maybe keep at West Ham. What's your sense? You know, last time we talked, we thought that you said Declan would be a Chelsea player at some point, but maybe not this window. Is it maybe moving to a place where this window is looking more likely now than it did the last time we spoke?
They'll try and do it this window. They will try and do it this window if they can. I mean, Frank wants a new defensive midfielder. I think that's pretty clear. And he's his top target. And I think probably, as I said last time, I'm pretty convinced that Declan Rice would like to return to Chelsea. I think they will try and do it. I think that the reason almost it's been left till last is I think it is probably the most difficult of all of them. He's on a long contract. West Ham would need big, big money. He's probably, even though he'd like to return to Chelsea because of the way he is at West Ham, I don't see him particularly forcing it. So it's a difficult one to do, but I think they will 100% try. And I do think that once the Mendy, look, all my information lately, and it hasn't quite fallen how I thought, because I actually thought Havertz would get completed a little bit quicker than it did. But all my information has been that now that once this goalkeeper one is over the line, it's kind of Operation Rice and see if they can get him. They've got kind of, let's see, what's the date today? We're talking on the 8th of September. So they've got pretty much a month to have a go at this. And they'll certainly give it a couple of weeks, I'd imagine, before they start considering whether they go for another target if they can't do it or whether they're prepared to wait. But I stand by my sort of statement that as long as Frank Lampard's head coach at Chelsea, then I do think when Declan Rice leaves West Ham, it will be for Chelsea, whether it be this summer or next summer.
So let's talk about Declan Rice for a second and what that would mean for the side if he came in. Is this a signifier to you, Matt, that there's a problem at CDM, or is this mostly a strength and depth option in an incredibly congested schedule this year?
Yeah, so I can give you a little bit of insight into the midfield that I've only come across myself the last couple of days, which I find interesting because I was finding it difficult to understand really why there is such a hard desire to bring in a defensive midfielder and potentially Declan Rice. So from what I'm told, Lampard and Chelsea are extremely happy with the talent they have in midfield, but they feel in that centre position, and particularly defensively, the mix hasn't been quite right. So, for instance, Kovacic and Jorginho, Kovacic had a great season last season, but I think there's a feeling that the two of them, when they're playing a three together, don't actually bring out the best in each other defensively. I think they think that when Kovacic and Jorginho are in the same team, it leaves holes. Similarly, I think the difficulty with Kovacic and Kante becomes is that they're both very quiet. So while very talented, I don't think there's a lot of talking in there. And I definitely have noticed that since restart. It's very interesting being able to watch matches with no crowd. And I was astonished at how quiet Chelsea were. I mean, funnily enough, Kepa's quite vocal. And Azpilicueta and Rüdiger can be vocal, but certainly in the midfield, very, very quiet. So I think they want to get the mix right. And I think they feel that the mix going forward is good, but the mix defensively is not quite right in that midfield. And they need someone who they feel can come in and provide a partner. I know they don't play in a two, but almost provide a partner to either a Kante or a Kovacic who can just solidify things and make them a bit tactically better when not in possession. So I believe that's where the desire comes. They think Declan Rice can definitely fulfil that role. I think there are other people that they're looking at too. Soumaré is one that Frank actually admitted last season that he liked. Brozovic Inter Milan, I think, has been looked at before. So there are others. But regardless of the names, they're very keen to get someone who tactically they feel can fit in to what Frank wants to do forward, but also for when they're not in possession and they don't quite feel with the people they have there that they have that option at the moment.
You know, we did see N'Golo Kanté shift back into that position at some points later in the season. Is he being viewed as an option for that spot, or do you think the way that they're looking at the midfield construction is that they don't view N'Golo Kanté fulfilling that defensive midfielder role for the season ahead?
Yeah, I think they are looking at him for that. He did well when he was put back there after the restart. And I just think that they don't feel they've quite got the right mix around him. The other problem you do have with Kante at the moment, which I know is an issue, is that we've now had two seasons where he's had quite a lot of injury problems, and he's 29. And I don't think, given the last two seasons, that you can take the risk of going into a season thinking that you can get a full season out of Kante without any layoffs, because just through maybe overplaying for 3 or 4 years before that, and both for France and for Leicester and then Chelsea, I think there is a fear that he's always going to have slight fitness issues. And I also think the club are aware of the fact that that is slightly their fault, because they have pushed. I mean, Sarri in his last year to get that Europa League win, I mean, quite frankly, was reckless with his fitness. And it set Kante back a lot. I mean, it got Sarri what he needed. They got their league position and they got Europa League, but it set Kante back quite a long way. And I think there's also a recognition at the club that they can't keep asking Kante to do that, because his body will break down.
So do you see the season ahead for Kante to be one more filled with rotation? And if so, then that kind of answers the question of how Declan Rice fits into the mix, right?
Yeah, I mean, it will depend on whether Chelsea can get in Declan Rice or someone else. I mean, if they can't, Kante to start with will have to play a lot of games, but I think they will be and have been more careful with him than certainly they were in the Sarri years and maybe the Conte years, where he was just asked to play. You know, if he was 50% fit, he was asked to play. It's a difficult one. If they signed Rice or another one, I obviously don't quite know how it would work out, but clearly Frank has a plan for that. The interesting thing with Rice, obviously, is that because he can play in defence as well, and even though they've signed Thiago Silva, I know the next phase of the plan, if they get a defensive midfielder in for this window, is to then in future windows start looking towards getting a dominant centre-back.
Right.
Thiago Silva gives them a bit of a stopgap, but Rice coming in would almost, you know, give them an option in both of those places, and potentially mean they don't actually have to sign two players, they can just sign one player.
So is your thought then that if it's looking like Rice isn't going to come in, that they will make a quick move to try to pick up like Soumare or Brozovic from Inter? Do you kind of think that is they'll give Rice a good 2 or 3 weeks, and if not, we'll see a pretty quick move to land one of those two players as a immediate fix for the coming season?
Yeah, so I mean, Frank's worried about this defensive midfield position, so I think there's a good chance that if they couldn't get Rice, he will look elsewhere rather than just hold out for Rice, because I think he is concerned that without sorting out this midfield mix, that it will continue to cost them. But as I say, because Rice can fulfill two positions, that wouldn't at all mean that they couldn't go for Rice in the future.
A quick follow-on in N'Golo Kante, because I think there's been some reporting, some rumors out there that Chelsea could look to potentially sell him. Are you seeing any of that on your end?
Frank's been very clear that he doesn't want to sell Kante publicly. And Frank's usually pretty straight on the record. He's quite an open book to read when he talks about transfers. But I've heard little whispers that potentially were something to come up that Kante fancied, and were the money right, then it would provoke a discussion. Because he's 29, because of his injury problems, because they did a contract with him that made him probably one of the highest earners at the club, if not the highest earner at the club, I think there would be a discussion. I'd be surprised still, but I wouldn't fully rule it out.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We've kind of talked about some of the incoming pieces. Now we want to kind of go to the outgoing. Who's going to go on loan? What some of those transfers outgoing are going to look like? It's a general Chelsea conversation. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. All right, so Matt, the other side of the equation is who is going out, because we've brought in all this wonderful talent, and now Chelsea need to make a little space both on the wage bill and then both on trimming down the size of the roster. So it seems like, and maybe just structurally, that we're going to see a lot of loans versus sales, just the way that the market is moving. Is that the sense that you're getting, that Chelsea are struggling to find buyers outright and are having to settle for like the loan with an option to buy?
Yeah, I mean, because of the way the market is, they're going to struggle to get the valuations that they would want on their players. It's not a good year to sell players, put it that way, because trying to get the big valuations that Marina is so good at getting is even more difficult than normal. So it would make sense to loan and try and sell in a better period when the market is healthier. So I can definitely see that, yeah. And also, there were restrictions on the loans going to come in for this summer, but I think they've been relaxed because of the situation with COVID and everything. So again, it's probably the last chance again to really take advantage of that loan market to try and help drive sales. So look, they will sell some players, but I would expect an awful lot of loans. And, you know, keeping up with the players going out is going to be really difficult, quite frankly. There's going to be a lot. And there's going to be a lot of funny little deals here and there.
You'll be quite busy, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say, because I can't dedicate 100% of my time to reporting on Chelsea, sadly. I have to report on other things as well. I tend to these days concentrate on the incoming and only ever get involved in the big outgoings if there's a big sale. The loans of the Zappa Costas and the Baba Rahmans of this world, I'll let other people report on because I don't have enough hours in the day.
So our first one, though, has been pretty well reported at this point. Bakayoko back to AC Milan. It seems like that is relatively likely to go through, loan plus buy option, right?
Yeah, if they can get the loan plus buy agreements, they like those because obviously it gives them some security if the loan doesn't go too well. Bakayoko did well at AC Milan a couple of years ago. He seemed to like it there. The ex-Arsenal chief executive, Ivan Gazidis, is at AC Milan. And weirdly, I think there's quite a good relationship between him and the club. So that ticks a lot of boxes. You would expect that one to happen. I think just before I came on this show, it's pretty much confirmed that Batshuayi is going back to Crystal Palace on loan. He's going to sign a one-year extension just to give Chelsea some security over getting a fee at the end of his contract, but he will go back on their loan. That looks sensible because that's somewhere he did well. So you would imagine that he will be comfortable there. And you would hope, Chelsea would hope that he can just do enough there to get his value back up. So that's sensible. Ethan Ampadu last night, I think that's a really interesting loan, Sheffield yeah. United. I've been told by a lot of people, both inside and outside Chelsea, that Ethan Ampadu is looking really good, that physically he's developed a lot. His year in Germany has done him well. Clearly, Chelsea still rate him highly, but clearly he was going to struggle to get too many minutes in Frank's team this season. So that looks a great loan going to Sheffield United, working under Chris Wilder, getting Premier League experience. It looks really good for doing that.
Another one, so there had been the initial links that Conor Gallagher might have a move to Crystal Palace. Obviously, with Mishy going there, kind of blocks him. What's your sense that he'll end up in a Premier League loan? And Leeds is another one that's been connected as well.
Yeah, he will end up at a Premier League club. I think there's an awful lot of Premier League clubs who've been showing an interest in him because he did so well when he was on loan last season. He will 100% get a Premier League loan. I think he'll have a choice of a few. The fact he's been to Charlton for half a season, I think he was. Was it half a season or a whole season at Charlton? Mm-hmm. He did well at Charlton. He obviously fancied going to Crystal Palace, which suggests he'd quite like to stay around London. If at all possible. But he'll be really interesting. I hope he does get somewhere in the Premier League where he plays a lot, because I'm quite looking forward to trying to watch a bit more of him.
One of the more puzzling ones to us has been the Fikayo Tomori story. This is a guy who, when he was partnered with Zuma, was the most successful center-back partnership last season statistically for the club. So can you maybe talk a little bit about what's going on with him going from kind of cemented first team to potentially loaned out?
Yeah, I think it surprised Tomori as well, actually. I think he's been surprised at the fact that his opportunities at the end of last season were so limited. He did have injuries. He had time out with injuries, which definitely set him back in the pecking order and set him back progress-wise. But I think he hoped that come towards the end of the season when he was fit that he would play a little bit more and be part of that rotation, because that back four or back three was rotating an awful lot. And I think it probably surprised him that he wasn't getting so much of a go there. Frank and Jody Morris and everybody at Chelsea just see it as part of the development. I think they probably thought that more of these Chelsea young players would actually follow the path of Tomori a bit more rather than managing to just stay in the whole team. And that's getting in the team and doing very well and then maybe dropping out and finding it a little bit tougher again when it levels out. I still think he's probably ahead of schedule. This time last year, they were thinking about either selling or loaning Tomori and probably didn't see him making quite the impact on the first team. And circumstances ended up sort of more than the other kids, I think. I think the plan was always that, that Mason Mount was going to come into the team, that Tammy Abraham would get a go. I think probably more the plan with Fikayo at one stage was to loan him out and get him experience, and then the plans changed through circumstance. So I don't think it's any sort of black mark against him in terms of his Chelsea future or what he's been doing. I think it's thought to be part more of the development. But he needs a Premier League loan now. I mean, having broken into the England squad and progressed as he did, and then had a quiet kind of 6 months at second half of the season, he now needs a Premier League loan.
Well, and if we're ruling out Crystal Palace with Mishy, if we're ruling out, you know, potentially a Leeds with Conor Gallagher, if we're ruling out a Sheffield with Ampadu, we're kind of, you know, starting to whittle down the number of clubs who would be available for a Premier League loan. Is there a spot you could see Fikayo reasonably going?
I doubt it now. I mean, this time last year, Everton were interested in him. I doubt it now because Ancelotti's gone in, and Everton sort of transfer policy has changed a little bit with that. Look, there are a lot of overseas clubs interested in Tomori as well. He's a very intelligent lad too. So I should have corrected myself earlier when I said about needing a Premier League loan. He needs a first team loan where he's playing in a top European division. It's probably more accurate. Funnily enough, I know Rennes were interested in him. So whether there's something going on there in terms of who might be able to go to Rennes as part of bringing the Mendy price down, you never know. There's German interest in him. There's French interest in him. There's interest from Premier League clubs. I don't exactly know which ones, if I'll be totally honest with you. I haven't followed that up recently. He will get a loan, and he'll be playing in one of the top European divisions if it isn't the Premier League. Like you say, though, the rules make it difficult. I mean, Chelsea have got so many players going on loan that, you know, every deal blocks off. When it's in England, every deal blocks off another one. So it is complicated. I don't think Marina Granovskaya has any days off or much time off in the summer. Let's put it that way.
Oh, that's fair to her.
Following up on the center back position, because this is another one where we thought there could be some movement this summer. Thiago Silva comes in, which means that obviously if Tomori goes out, that's kind of a one-for-one swap. But are you hearing anything on Christensen or Rudiger? They kind of seem to be at a pivotal point in their Chelsea careers. Is this kind of the last dance in terms of figuring out which one kind of moves forward, or do they both have bright futures?
I think this is my theory. I haven't had information on this. This is, let's say, slightly informed theory from people I've talked to, but certainly not information I've had recently. I think in another summer, in different times, Rudiger, Zuma or Christensen, or even two of them would have been sold. I think there are doubts about them all. And I don't think that anyone thinks that the mix between them is right. And that was clear last season. Rudiger's a big character, but in terms of style, there's not really a dominant centre-back back then. They need a dominant centre-back. I think they're all playing for their futures. I think all the centre-backs are playing for their futures because I don't think there's any certainty over any of them. Christensen, I think the club has always feared that were they to sell him, they could find themselves in a De Bruyne or Salah situation, that he would go abroad, probably do better than he does in the Premier League, as we saw in Germany, because in a less physical league, and then I think he would flourish. And then you could easily find that a year playing like that really kicks his career on. So I think they've got a difficult decision on Christensen. He's a tricky one. Rudiger, again, age, injuries count against him in terms of long-term future. Even though his personality and obviously his talent, you know, you wouldn't give that up easily. But I think he's probably now coming to the twilight of his Chelsea career almost. I think him, Zuma, Christensen, all playing for their futures, all very much playing for their futures.
All right, so before we end this episode, we're going to get through some kind of just initial Chelsea chatter going on at the moment. I think one thing that's on everybody's mind, especially, is the recovery of some key new signing, and then a player who ended the season in really, really fine form. Do you have a sense on the status of Hakim Ziyech and Christian Pulisic, where they're at in their recoveries, and when we might see them? Like, is Ziyech potentially in consideration for game week 1?
I think Ziyech might struggle for the first game. I think he is carrying an injury. I think he might find it difficult to play that first game. He might be on the bench. I'm not saying he won't be part of the squad, but from what I hear, he's got a bit of making up to do for that first game. So there's every chance. I mean, in actual fact, Chelsea have got a few issues looking forward to the first game against Brighton. Chilwell, I think, is out for a couple of weeks. I don't think there's any chance of him playing. Thiago Silva has been having to quarantine because of obviously coming from Brazil and everything, and then over from France. So I think there's a chance that he can't be involved against Brighton unless they're willing to throw him in with very little training with the team and the squad. Havertz, we know, will only have really a week training with the team, so he might have to have a slow start. I think expectation on him to start with needs to be tempered a little bit. I think people need to give him time. Physically, he's going to be a little bit behind of the stages. So they've got some issues looking forward to that first game for sure. What I am told is that Werner is looking incredible. And, you know, if you're picking your fantasy teams now, I've put Werner in my fantasy team because I'm expecting a fast start from Werner. So let's see. But, there's issues there fitness-wise for them. And of course, we know it's been publicised that some of the English lads as well, you know, Tammy, Mason, Mount and people have had COVID. They've had to quarantine. They've had COVID after their holidays. So physically, they haven't all been in the best shape this summer.
So I think another one that would be kind of worth just going through is there hasn't been official confirmation yet, but squad numbers are something that fans get excited about, even though the players may not be care as much about that as winning a match. Any sense in terms of where the numbers might settle? I think especially from our American, mostly American audience, that a Christian Pulisic 10 is something that would be very exciting. In addition to maybe does Timo get his 11? Does Hakim get his 22? And does Havertz maybe get his 29?
You've stumped me there. You have really stumped me in the shirt numbers. Shirt numbers, I'm going to have to go away and do my homework on shirt numbers. It's not something I'm very good at. I think I'd be very surprised if Werner didn't get his number 11. That's the shirt he's worn with success, and it's obviously available and easy to pass on. So I would be extremely surprised if Werner didn't get his number 11. On the others, quite frankly, I have no idea. I'll be completely honest with you. I don't follow the shirt numbers things at all. I mean, you've only just made me think that the 10 is free, obviously, and who takes the 10? Callum Hudson-Odoi this time last year wanted the 10, but I would be surprised if he got the 10 just from the way things have panned out the last year or so for him. So I don't know. Let's see.
Matt, are there any other transfer rumors, any other tasty nuggets that you have in your locker that you're looking to share out at this point? I know that we're kind of coming to the end of this episode, so I wanted to give a little teaser, a little sneak peek for our audience.
I think in terms of what Chelsea want to do this window, I think it's well known. I think the exciting thing for Chelsea fans is that for Frank Lampard, this is phase one. You know, they've signed 7 players so far, and he's hoping to take it to 8 or 9 players, albeit Malang Sarr will go out on loan. But so it's a massive transition, but it's phase one. You know, there is a phase two plan as well. There's a phase two behind this in that, like I say, down the line, probably a dominant centre-half, if not maybe 2 centre-halves. There'll be other areas that they're still looking at. Maybe another wide man. They'll see how things go with a wide man. Or maybe sort of a more traditional striker, should we say, depending on how... There's big plans afoot for future transfer windows. What I think they wanted to do this year, they wanted to get as many as they could in with a chance of having some pre-season, which they've done well on. And that they've done to set them well for this summer, and I think they would prefer not to have to do much if anything in January, because I think Giroud worked very well for them in January, but I think they like most clubs, they don't want to have to do much in January, and they've put themselves in a position in a lot of windows recently where they've been scratching around having to try and do things in January to almost rescue the season or keep the season going, and they really wanted to avoid that. So they're in a good place for phase one. but there is a phase two.
So we're moving into phase two of the Chelsea cinematic universe. I'm very excited about this. It's going to be great.
One last thing before we get you out of here, Matt, is, every transfer has spoken about the impact of Frank Lampard in the conversations. What's your sense on how he's going to be setting up this lineup now with so many attacking talents, with so many players talking about, the where they might play? Do you have a sense on where Werner fits, where Havertz is going to fit, Hakim is going to fit, Pulisic's going to fit? Is there any sense on how the club is going to be setting that up?
It'll be really interesting. Look, I think Werner will be the central striker to start with. Albeit, I think the front three could end up being a lot more fluid than it's been, rather than having one specific striker. A bit like, I'm really not comparing, I'm trying not to say that they're going to copy Liverpool, because they're not, but just in terms of having a fluidity whereby, your main goal scorer isn't always through the middle. And I think there's going to be fluidity there. Havertz is really interesting because I think he's got a bit of catching up to do physically, just for the Premier League. He's a tall guy, but he's a slight guy. And I think they feel physically and tactically, in terms of defensively, they've got a bit of work to do with him. I wouldn't necessarily be surprised if Havertz plays wide a little bit to start with, just whereby it gives him a bit of a break defensively and physically, rather than, I think, in time he will be through the middle. And I might be wrong, he might start through the middle, but I've been looking at that one, wondering whether he could play. I know he can play right side, and I wonder whether he might dovetail a little bit with Ziyech to start with while those two settle in. It's going to be really interesting. Pulisic will start on the left. Pulisic is fit given the finish. He's got that shirt at the moment. The left side of that front three is Pulisic's to start with, and then there'll be competition there for him. It's really, really going to be interesting. They're not all going to, certainly in terms of Ziyech, Ziyech may well end up coming off the bench sometimes as well. I don't think there's any certainties for any of them. Even Havertz might start the first month mainly coming off the bench because of catching up with everybody. It's the forward line is so exciting and so interesting to see how that shakes down. And I don't think even in the first 3 months of the season we will necessarily know who for the future has got which shirt, because I think there's going to be a lot of changing around to start with.
Have you heard anything on Christian's injury? I think that's the one injury we didn't touch on of the many on the bench.
Yeah, I think they're hoping that Pulisic will be okay. I think they're hoping that he will start the season. In terms of where his fitness is, I'm not sure. He's another one who's had to quarantine, who's had issues with coming back and coronavirus quarantine. And so I don't think necessarily the injury is the biggest concern with him, but like a lot of them, he's missed some training because of having to quarantine. I personally think he will probably start the season. I'll be honest, if you're asking me how fit he is, I don't know at the moment. We'll know better. This time next week, we'll probably be speaking to, I'll be speaking to Frank on Thursday or Friday, actually. So yeah, we'll know then.
Well, everyone will be following your updates religiously, as a Chelsea supporter is wont to do. So, Matt, we appreciate another update, another Matt Law special on the London is Blue podcast. Hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and thank you for coming back on again.
Thanks, guys. Look forward to it.
Yeah. Nick, pleasure as always. And then until next time, Chelsea fans, Premier League football is back this week. Keep the blue flag flying high.